Iran says sanctions and threats have done nothing to stop Iran's progress in the nuclear and scientific fields. On this edition of News Analysis, we're asking whether the US and Israel are really interested in the option of war, what needs to be done to make negotiations a viable solution, and basically, what is it about Iran that Washington wants to confront?
And we are of the opinion that the Iranian regime is a rational actor. And it's for that reason, I think, that we think the current path we're on is the most prudent path at this point.
Rare comments by U.S. military's Joint Chiefs of Staff following decades of all-out propaganda campaign to demonize Iran as an aggressive country. General Martin Dempsey, who discussed Iran with Israeli officials last month, says an attack on Iran is not justified because it is unclear that Tehran will actually use its nuclear capabilities to build an atomic bomb.
And we also know, or believe we know, that the Iranian regime has not decided that they will embark on the capability or the effort to weaponize their nuclear capability.
You think that is still unclear?
America softened its tone on Iran after Tehran unveiled several important nuclear achievements. The country has produced its own nuclear fuel to be used for medical purposes and is now enriching uranium at a faster pace thanks to domestically made centrifuges. All this despite decades of harsh US-led sanctions aimed at bringing the country to its knees. Iran has responded to a letter by EU's foreign policy chief Catherine Ashton, saying it's ready to resume talks with the P5+1 over a range of issues. The group comprises the five permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany. Tensions between Iran and the EU have been rising over the bloc's unilateral sanctions on Iran's crude. Tehran has already cut off oil exports to Britain and France. It has threatened several other European countries with oil export bans unless they stop their hostile policies towards the Islamic Republic. The move has sent oil prices to their highest level in recent months. The US and its Western allies have accused Tehran of pursuing nuclear weapons. Iran, however, rejects the claims. It has always maintained cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, allowing the inspectors to visit its nuclear facilities. On Monday, the IAEA officials arrived in Tehran for the second time in less than a month to discuss future cooperation. Tehran says its right to peaceful nuclear energy is not negotiable, and any talks with the P5+1 must be based on recognition of the country's nuclear rights. Iranian officials say the West must stop resorting to illegal means, including imposing sanctions, adopting anti-Iran resolutions, and targeting Iranian scientists to show determination to resolve grievances with Iran.
Joining me now live from London is Charlie Witch, a political activist. Thanks for being with us. Also with us live from Washington, author and journalist Mr. Webster Griffin Tarpley. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. And joining me also on the line from Mississippi is writer and security affairs expert Dr. Alan Sabrowski. I'll put my first question, though, to our guest in Washington, Dr. Tarpley. What are the sanctions and military threats, do you think, Dr. Tarpley, aimed at achieving?
Well, the purpose of this is economic warfare, and the goal is world domination. In other words, it is the acting out of a hysterical conviction that we have here, a kind of psychosis of destabilization, as I've called it, on the part of the U.S. ruling elite, the people in the Obama administration, Obama, Panetta, Hillary Clinton, Donna Lahn, and Susan Rice at the United Nations. They are determined not to tolerate any independent countries anywhere in the world. That is the secret of this wave of color revolutions that the Obama administration has launched. The color revolutions, the CIA people power coup, let's remember it really started in mid-2009 with an action directed against Iran. It was the so-called Green Revolution, an attempt to overthrow the existing government. Included within this commitment to all-out world domination, there's also the question of, can anybody actually enjoy the fruits of peaceful economic development, including peaceful nuclear energy, and obviously including the full fuel cycle, which is indispensable to make that economically viable. And the answer to that is, once again, no, that the U.S., the British, the NATO powers, France, Israel, and others, this coalition, are determined that nobody is allowed to stand against them, and nobody is allowed to assert the inherent right that everybody has to peaceful nuclear energy, which is, I think, it's a very important feature of it. They don't want third world or developing sector development, and they're willing to fight on that issue.
Well, you say economic warfare. Let's put that question to our guest in London, Charlie Witch. When we are speaking about putting economic pressure on Iran, some observers may be saying that, well, the sanctions are now hitting back at, especially Europe. We're seeing Iran announcing that it's going to cut oil exports, for instance, to these European countries, and oil prices soaring. So when the oil sanctions, for instance, that were taken by the European Union did lead to this retaliatory reaction, can Europe afford to insist on continuing on this path?
Well, I think Europe can afford, and they will continue, these sanctions. Dr. Tarpley is absolutely correct when he says that the goal here of the Western world and their Israeli pit bull in the Middle East is total global domination. And as Henry Kissinger said, you know, those that in the international community that oppose the plan of the West that we call terrorists are just simply in opposition to it. And we have a world now where, you know, we had that guy saying that Iran is a rational agent, but I can say for sure, and I think the other guests will agree, that Israel, based on the collective pain from World War II, thinking that everyone is out to annihilate them, is certainly not a rational agent. So what I think is going to happen, I think this attack on the Iranian nuclear facilities is unfortunately inevitable.
Well, let's bring our guest now from Mississippi, that's Dr. Sabrowski, and put that question to Dr. Sabrowski. As Charlie was just mentioning there, U.S. Military Joint Chiefs of Staff General Martin Dempsey, he's described Iran as a, quote, rational player in the international arena, though, interestingly enough, that remark of his was later omitted from CNN's website. Do you think the U.S. is thinking that the sanctions are or are not hitting back now?
Well, I don't think it really matters what the American administration may say. The current administration, if anything, has signaled that at least at this point it's not prepared to join Israel in an attack on Iran. What I think the Israelis understand is that any electable Republican candidate will join them in an attack. That would be one of the first things to come. I should mention, by the way, I don't share the other Speaker's comments on global domination as a goal. I was looking at the American economy a short time ago and noted that our national debt very nearly equals our gross domestic product, and the question is just at what point the economy is going to implode. And it's a little bit difficult to seek global domination when your economy is collapsing. But the thing to understand, I'm afraid, and this has become very, very clear on a host of news programs, I use the term news loosely, within the United States in the last several weeks, is that there is a very assiduous manipulation and preparation of public opinion by all of the networks that makes the comparable manipulation of opinion on weapons of mass destruction, which of course didn't exist preparatory to the war on Iraq, pale by comparison. Virtually nothing Iran can do, literally Iran can do, can derail that media campaign and the public opinion that it's creating of Iran as in some way a global threat, not just to Israel, not just to the United States, but a global threat. And that is largely being accepted here to a degree that that would be difficult for someone not following it to truly accept.
Well, speaking about the option of war, Dr. Tarpley, if I could put that question to you now. We know that General Dempsey has said in his remarks that Washington is not sure, in his words, about the militarization of Iran's nuclear program. Iran, of course, has been arguing if the United States is really concerned about a country's nuclear program in the region, it should be concerned about the nuclear warheads that Israel possesses as one entity in the region. So, first of all, what is it about Iran that basically is creating all this concern for Washington? And would you agree that Washington is actually planning to launch that strike?
I think there is a grave danger of this strike. First of all, let's look at Iran. I think Iran has done everything that a reasonable country could do. The IAEA inspectors have been allowed in. They're going to be looking around at different things that they asked to see. The negotiations have been offered. There's a positive response on the table now to Baroness Ashton's letter. So those talks should begin. From that point of view, Iran has I think, behaved in a perfectly reasonable and normal manner. The problem is on the U.S. side. If we look at a figure like Dempsey, I'm afraid some of these statements that he makes are really an attempt to cover himself. In other words, if a military attack occurs, a debacle ensues, he doesn't want to be held responsible. Mm. We have Panetta earlier this week, the Secretary of Defense, saying that there has been no decision by Iran to build nuclear weapons. It means, in effect, that the old national intelligence estimate from the fall of 2007 is still in force, that there is no Iranian nuclear weapons program. But at the same time, Panetta says that he feels that the United States has a common cause with Israel if they should make an attack. Now, that, I think, is criminal negligence, because what that amounts to saying is that the United States is farming out a critical decision of foreign policy, the entry into a new ruinous war under terrible conditions. That decision essentially is being placed in the hands of the Israelis, that they can drag the U.S. into such a conflict if they want to. A real American government, just as a hypothetical, because we don't have one, would say to the Israelis, they'd say to General Gantz today, General Gantz, you're going to make your own decision in your own time. You'll also bear the consequences in your own time. We are not part of your attack. We don't want anything to do with this. You will be on your own, and the aid will be cut off if you do this. That would be, I think, a contribution to peace.
Right.
The last thing in terms of the mentality of the U.S. ruling class, the more bankrupt they are, the more adventurous they are. The more the U.S. banking system collapses, the more they hysterically seek some solution in foreign policy adventures. So it's being bankrupt doesn't slow them down. It speeds them up.
Yeah. Charlie Witch, now, Dr. Tarpley there referred to the issue of dialogue and negotiations here. We know that that has been raised recently in the international media. We've heard Catherine Ashton talk about it. And now here in Iran, Saeed Jalili, the head of the Supreme National Security Council, he said that Iran is prepared for talks. But what is hindering the process of negotiations when Iran says it wants these talks to be based on mutual respect? It wants it to be a win-win situation.
Well, basically, as Dr. Tarpley was saying there, it's not about what's rational, what's moral, what's politically correct, whether Iran is developing nuclear weapons or not. We need to look at the reality of the situation. We have the exact same ramping up in the propaganda in the West that we see. I can't pick up a newspaper or look at a website here in the UK without seeing Iran, 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 nuke, 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 nuke. And so we're seeing the exact same ramping up that we saw before the Iraq war. And whether Iran is developing nuclear weapons or not, I don't know. But the fact is that Israel is not going to allow them to even think about developing these nuclear weapons. And you know what's the biggest sad thing in all this is that the ego, the collective ego of Iran, being the Islamic Republic, having a domestic audience that wants them to stand up against Israel, that wants them to have Hezbollah and Hamas fighting Israel, is that they can't back down now. The sanctions are not going to work because the Iranian regime, with the failed Green Revolution, I mean, they're holding on by a thin thread to power anyway. So if they were to suddenly stop developing peaceful nuclear energy, the internal domestic situation would collapse. And so we're going to have all these civilians and all these young working class men and women for the Iranian army going to be blown to pieces because of the actions of the Ayatollahs and of the high-ranking Iranian ego-driven power-hungry elite. So the way I see this, just like the Syria situation, it's a bigger mafia attacking a smaller mafia.
Yeah, there's one question here that I'd like to put this one to Dr. Sabrowski, and that is, Dr., various U.S. officials have come out talking against an Israeli attack on Iran. First of all, can Israel attack Iran without prior permission from the U.S.? And second of all, is the U.S., do you think, playing a good cop, bad cop game here?
The answer is yes in both cases. Because Israel could absolutely, because of its total control of the United States Congress and the leverage that Jewish money in the campaign process and Jewish control of the media have in this country, it can absolutely count on the United States to veto any attempt in the UN Security Council to do anything to Israel if it did launch an attack. An attack by it militarily would be precarious. The only way I could see them actually doing what they have asserted they would do to Iran's nuclear capabilities, and I'm talking about the facilities, not any type of military capabilities, would be to use tactical nuclear weapons. I don't see conventional weapons carrying it out. And I think even using that, they could count on the United States to provide a diplomatic shield. For them, it would be safer, I would think, to wait until a Republican comes into office, if they think he will, because then they could count on active support. One thing that's occurred to me is that possibly the wrong question is being asked here. You know, it's not, is Iran developing a nuclear capability, nuclear weapons capability, but why shouldn't it? You know, the Bush administration came up with this axis of evil of Iraq, North Korea, and Iran. And it's been instructive, I think, looking at the example of Iraq, which had no nuclear weapons, and North Korea, which is a truly despicable regime, and did have a handful of them, and no one even thought of a military option against North Korea. I would suspect, looking at Israel, and to a certain extent the United States, almost any sensible country would immediately develop a handful of nuclear weapons and the ability to use them simply to avoid becoming a victim and replicating the experience of Iraq.
Dr. Tarpley,
why shouldn't they have them?
Yeah, let's put this question to Dr. Tarpley here as well. Do you think, Dr. Tarpley, that there is a unified stance between Israel and the United States on the option of war? I mean, a lot of people may be saying it's election year, that the U.S. can't economically now engage in this kind of war. Is this just empty rhetoric coming from Israel, or do you think that the two sides agree that there should be a military strike here?
I think it would be superficial to look at it as Israel on the one side, U.S., Britain on the other. It's an international faction fight where the factions cut across the national borders. We've heard that these relatively weak bureaucrats of the Obama administration would like to avoid this for the moment, maybe until October, when they could perhaps win the election based on a rally-round effect. But the other thing is, we've had Haig of the British now saying that he doesn't think an attack is a good idea. There is certainly a group in Wall Street that wants an attack, and they want it because they want $500 a barrel oil. They really think that that's the only way to save the dollar. So within the Wall Street and the Federal Reserve, you have that. But let's step back now. Instead of thinking about what these crazy Anglo-American financier elites are going to do, let's remember, there's now a block of states in the world, right? The UN General Assembly vote last week showed that there's a community of nations potentially there which oppose this insane notion. It would be Russia, China,
right.
Iran, Syria, Pakistan, Venezuela and its ALBA group in Central and South America, Zimbabwe, Sri Lanka, who have known what terrorism and similar interventions mean. If we look at the abstentions, we find Algeria, very important country, Lebanon,
right.
immediately involved. In other words, you've got almost 30 countries one way or another that would like to avoid this war. And I think it would be important at this point for a figure like soon-to-be President Putin of Russia, to come forward with some kind of an initiative, a multilateral initiative, either to propose negotiations, some kind of a global solution to this entire Middle East problem, what we haven't really had since the U.S.-Soviet statement of 1975, or some kind of an ultimatum to the U.S., the British, and the Israelis, saying, don't do it, or you will be in conflict with a very large and powerful group of states.
But you refer to something interesting that I'd like to raise with our guest in London, Mr. Witch, and that is when we are speaking about some countries like Russia and China having a very strong influence now at the UN Security Council, and not just these two countries, but when we speak about countries like, for instance, as well as Russia and China, India or Latin American countries, and these are countries that have, for instance, said that they will not impose those sanctions that have been forced upon them from the European Union on Iran's oil, for instance. And we can speak about the NAM movement, the non-aligned movement. We can speak about the BRICS nation. And some political observers have been saying that this is moving towards creating a new world order. And this is threatening the global financial rather dominance of the United States in Europe. What do you think will happen?
Well, we didn't see Russia or China do too much about Libya or Afghanistan or Iraq. So my suspicion is that Russia and China, for the meantime, with the situation now happening in Iran, will kind of rattle their swords. They'll get a bit upset, but they're not going to stand in the way of the biggest imperial military force on the planet and the most advanced military intelligence, Mossad. They're not suicidal. And let's not forget that Russia and China's economies are so deeply intertwined with the West. So I think they're going to do the whole, yeah, we support Iran, but then they'll just kind of stay silent at the very end. And the Iranian regime will go, where are our friends? They are nowhere to be seen. And that's it. That's what I think.
Mr. Sabrowski, let's see if you agree with that position. First of all, do you think that the United States, as I mentioned earlier, is facing that threat in the form of a transformation maybe in the world financial or economic order? Do you think that the fact that economically countries like China, like India, Russia here are gaining prominence, that this is going to change the global order, even in the case involving Iran here that we're talking about?
I'm going to have to take a pass on that. As I have told people, when it comes to international economics, I'm even worse than it comes to managing my checkbook. I'm aware of the strategic implications of something that happens, but I can't comment on the economics of it per se. But I think the other comment that the gentleman in London made, that no matter what the rest of these countries might say, they aren't going to put themselves in the face of a military juggernaut, is very clear. They can't afford that right now. But that isn't going to be necessary. What has to be done militarily, either by Iran in concert with these other countries or by some of those other countries taking the initiative to work in concert with Iran, is to make a unilateral Israeli strike prohibitively expensive. If that can be done, then in fact we might buy enough time for something else to happen. But that's not the case right now, and Iran alone can't do it.
And the last question I'd just like to put to Dr. Tarbley before we run out of time. Dr. Tarbley, as a closing remarks, would you say then that countries like Russia and China, we've seen what they're doing in the case of Syria, that they're not going to play any significant role here?
No, I would disagree with that. I think we've had a statement from Moscow saying that any attack on Iran would be a grave error. That, I think, was a solemn warning, almost an ultimatum. At the same time, we've had two rounds of vetoes, joint Russian-Chinese vetoes for measures against Syria. And we really have to regard Syria as an integral part of the same thing. I don't have any criticisms to make of the Syrian regime or the government of Iran. I think this will leave this to others. But right now, I think it's likely that with President Putin making a comeback and the failed appeasement policy of Medvedev being dumped, which is what led to Libya, there is, I think, a good chance that the red lines that Foreign Minister Lavrov have talked about are serious red lines that Russia and China will actually force the U.S. and the British to respect.
Right. Thank you very much, Dr. Webster. Griffin Tarpley joining us there live from Washington, author and journalist. A big thank you as well to Charlie Witch, political activist, who was with us live from London, and also writer and security affairs expert, Dr. Alan Sabrowski, joining us on the line from Mississippi. I'm afraid we've run out of time for this edition of News Analysis from me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team in Tehran. It's goodbye.